On this episode of Inside Boxing Live, Chris and I will break down what happened this weekend. Dimitri Bivol was victorious. David Morrell was victorious. There were some fights announced at the 168-pound division, Benavidez versus Plant. We'll talk about who should be Fighter of the Year, and we'll take a look at the final remaining months of the year. I can't believe it's November already. Let's go. What is up, everybody? Welcome into another edition of Inside Boxing Live, presented by John Boy Media. I am Dan Canobio, joined every single week by former 140-pound champion Chris Algieri from sunny Florida. Chris, how are you on this Sunday morning as we record?
I'm doing great. Looking forward to covering last night's activities.
Yeah, Sunday. I feel like these Sundays episodes feel a little more laid back right now. I mean, I spent a whole weekend watching these fights, and Friday, I was charged up because Plant versus Benavidez got announced, came out of nowhere, and I said this. There's nothing better, in my opinion, than when a fight gets announced out of nowhere. Love that.
Yeah, and it's a fight that we spoke on air about just a few days prior, and one that we were excited and one that needed to happen, and one that we were really bummed wasn't happening, because at the time, Benavidez was still supposed to fight Uzagate. But now, the boxing gods have been watching our show, obviously, found out that we weren't into it, and they made the right fight.
Yeah, I think Showtime, Steven Espinosa and the Showtime people are watching our show, because we were like, hey, yeah, we don't want to see Benavidez versus No Hope. We want to see Plant Benavidez. Boom. But I also do think that the bad press that was floating around from Spence and Crawford, and yeah, a lot of the fingers being pointed every which way, let's erase some of that bad press. Let's erase some of that with announcing a fight that everyone wants to see. I think it's one of the three best fights you could make in boxing. So that is something we will talk about on this show. This show is very focused on 168 and 175 pounds. The biggest fight this weekend was Dimitri Bivol and Gilberto Ramirez. And geez, Dimitri Bivol with a near shutout. I stopped scoring it after round 9 because every round started to look the same. I think I gave the third round to Ramirez. Zurdo couldn't get anything going. Something we talked about on the show on Friday. I didn't think he was going to be able to mount anything consistent, because the jab and the defense of Zurdo is just, of Bivol is just on another level. 88%, that's how many punches Zurdo missed. He limited to 18% of his total. Oh, it's 12. My math is correct. 12%. That's how much Zurdo landed in this fight. I will ask you, Chris, is Dimitri Bivol unsolvable?
And yeah, yes. Right. I mean, no one's unsolvable. But so the way he looked last night, it actually made Canelo look better, because Canelo actually won rounds. Zurdo had nothing. He had no answer for anything. Everything that we said Bivol was good at and was going and could do, he did. And there was no answer from Ramirez all night. Ramirez looked confused. He looked slow. He looked completely out of his depth. Bivol is that good. Also, we spoke about how Bivol, when he fights the lower level guys, he does the same thing and he dominates and no one's impressed. Then he fights these high level undefeated guys, does the exact same thing. Then it's impressive. He needs to just have big fights. Now, in terms of solving the puzzle that is Dimitri Bivol, I don't know what it's going to take. And it might just come down to just clipping him and making sure that you have enough power to hurt him and go from there. We saw him hurt against Joe Smith. Joe was able to hurt him along the ropes. I think it was one of the later rounds.
It was like 9 or 10.
9 or 10. Yeah, exactly. He cracked him at the end of the round. Bivol walked off, actually grabbed the rope with his glove, went to the corner, spoke about it later on that he was hurt. He did a good job of hiding it. So, you know, he can be hurt. And I think there's the answer for that, and that's why it's so interesting that the fight that needs to happen and most likely will happen is against a serious puncher in Beterbiev.
Yeah. Outside of I wouldn't say lucky punch. I don't believe in that in professional sports on any level. But, yeah, he has to be hurt in a fight. And what's interesting in this fight is Zurdo throws 72 punches around a light heavyweight. That was basically cut in half. We've seen this all the time when a volume puncher fights someone of a boxer, it just goes gone. I think the first round you saw Bivol move in and out, land a few combinations, and Zurdo is like, I've never seen anything like that before. It was almost from the first round on, it's like, I'm not going to be able to solve this. I mean, that's like same thing you said when you saw him fight Sullivan Barrera, first round. Getting after you said that on Friday about the range and getting in and out, obviously something I knew about Bivol, but I kept my eye on it in that first half of the fight. And that's what Bivol does so well, in my opinion, is just in and out. It's very limited movement and it's very little wasted movement. He's just efficient, basically on a in, out, in, out. And when he's in, he lands a few combinations. When he's out, he's out of range. And he didn't have that great of a performance. He only landed 20% of his punches, but he was on his front foot a little bit more in this fight than in recent times. He threw more power shots than he did jabs. That's the first time he's done that in a very long time. It wasn't like he was super sharp, though. Like, he had moments where he obviously snapped the head back of Zerto, but this is what Bivol does. Like, he'll throw a 3-4 punch combination and then get out. Like, he won't sit there in the pocket any longer and try to get hit back with anything. Maybe that, I say, was the only knock. And it's something we talked about Friday as well on Thursday's episode, is if he maybe had a few more knockouts, maybe stayed in the pocket a little more, you know, we could be talking about a stoppage win. We could be talking, same thing with Canelo. I thought maybe he could have went for it towards the end. We could be talking about back-to-back stoppage wins for Bivol. So that's the only knock I would say, is that I would like to see him stay in the pocket more, but that's just not his game. And he's pretty much a veteran at this point. He's not going to change it just so we could be happier.
Yeah, no, he's highly disciplined. And that's something that I really focused on last night when I watched this fight, and this morning, that his discipline is next level. He doesn't go outside of himself at all. He doesn't push for that extra chance. He doesn't take that risk. I speak about this on air multiple times about guys who get knockouts aren't always just punchers. They have a mentality. Knockouts are a mentality, not so much just a power punch. Guys are like, oh, you got power, you don't. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily. Some of these guys, like Canelo, gets a lot of stoppages. He's not a one-punch guy. Never really has been. He has scored one-punch knockouts, sure, but that's not the kind of fighter he is, especially at the high level. But he goes for broke to get those knockouts. He wants knockouts. He goes for it. He puts himself in the pocket to get hit and to receive back, but he takes those risks. Dmitry Bivol does not take those risks.
Yeah, it doesn't at all. His defense is otherworldly, like we said, sick, limiting Zerto, who came in as a offensive-minded fighter, an undefeated fighter. Yes, we've heard the knocks. He's padded record. Has fought decent opposition, but there's no doubt about it. Zerto Ramirez is a top five light heavyweight, and Dmitry Bivol completely disarmed him. Now, Bivol's opponent connect percentage goes down to 12.7, which is by far tops in boxing. It's ahead of Shakur Stevenson now. Those two are probably the two best defenders in all boxing, but you saw it on display. Go ahead.
And he's a guy, he doesn't fight with his hands up, and he doesn't move his head real well. His defense is entirely based on his in and out movement. It's awesome to see. His first line of, the lines of defense in boxing are your feet, your head movement, and then your hands, your hand position. Mm-hmm. He has mastered the first line of defense, which is his range. He's such an amazing master of the judgment of range and getting in and out at the right time, and his timing and his defense is entirely based on his footwork. And he's not a big mover, like you said. He's very efficient in his movement. He just knows that he can take a half step here, half step there, and make you miss by centimeters.
It's awesome to watch. I know it's not really for everyone, but really, if you can sit there and appreciate it, it's something to watch. It's unbelievable how you can disarm these fighters one by one. I guess the only way you can beat him is to wait till he gets old and the reflexes go and you lose a little bit, but I don't think that's happening anytime soon. He's still in his prime.
Still in his prime, and has taken so few punches, so little damage. Seems like he's in shape year-round. I don't see the era of, and it's going to be an era, I believe, of Bivol ending anytime soon.
The one thing also I like about Dmitry Bivol is all week long, he was asked about Canelo Alvarez. After the fight, he's asked about Canelo Alvarez. The Zone pundits wanted to talk about Canelo Alvarez afterwards, obviously, because Canelo fights on the Zone, and that could be a marketable fight for Bivol. It's more, everyone wants it besides Dmitry Bivol. And I don't say that he doesn't want it because he's ducking or anything like that. He doesn't want it because he simply wants to be undisputed. That's the fight. All fans want it. You know, we talked about it on Thursday's show. I talked about it afterwards. That's the fight. It has come to the forefront. It was the fight for the last 2-3 years. Now, so even more that Bivol has beat Canelo and now Zerto. It is very clear who was number one at light heavyweight. That is Artur Beterbiev. It is very clear who was number two, maybe even 1A to 1B. That is Dmitry Bivol. That's the fight we got to see next. Who wins? This is a tough one. Tough one for you, Chris. Who wins? Dmitry Bivol versus Archer Beterbiev.
I got Bivol. I see it again. I you know, you when you have a master boxer with that incredible defensive ability fighting a master puncher. Beterbiev is very technical, actually. He does not get credit for his boxing ability and his skills and his technique. He is extremely, extremely technical. And I've spoken to his coaches about this, about Beterbiev and how technical he actually is. But there's just a difference in the styles. Some styles just don't match up well together. I don't believe that the style of Archer Beterbiev matches up well with Bivol. That being said, he has the thing that I said you're going to need to beat Bivol. He has that power, that crushing punch. So if he does catch Bivol and is able to hurt him, he has the best chance to beat him. But I personally, I'm saying it right now, I don't think he does.
I think
Bivol beats him as well.
It is such a good fight. It is such a 50-50 fight. You can make legitimate cases for each guy. Beterbiev, what, 19-0 with 19 knockouts? Doesn't know how to lose.
I'm a huge fan of Beterbiev, by the way. Huge fan.
I mean, how can you not be at this point? If you're a boxing fan, you love knockouts. This is your guy. Yeah. You have a guy, you know, that just wants to fight the best. No nonsense. This is your guy. I mean, there's no doubt about it. You just got to be a legitimate hater if you don't like the way Archer Beterbiev fights, because he literally has every punch, every tool that you possibly need, underrated defense, comes forward. And what's interesting in this fight is a Beterbiev Bivol fight is Beterbiev landing on Bivol and pushing him back. Like we said, we've seen him hurt against Joe Smith. But look what Beterbiev just did to Joe Smith. I don't always like to use the triangle theory in boxing because I don't think it always works. But Beterbiev is relentless. And one reason I would maybe favor Beterbiev is because he comes forward, he can walk through some of Bivol's best punches, because we know from Bivol, he's not the most powerful puncher. He's just very accurate and his timing is impeccable. I think Beterbiev can walk through some of those, wear him down, which we thought that Zerto might have been able to do. And clearly that was not the case.
Too slow.
Could not do it. Who's too small?
Too slow.
Right.
Was Ramirez, yeah.
But Beterbiev might be able to walk through some of those shots early, not be deterred by anything coming from Bivol's side. And then from like rounds 8 through 12, hopefully, I don't really care who wins. I just want to see a good fight. You can see Bivol wear down a little bit, and that's when Beterbiev pounces. That's how I can see the fight maybe playing out if you want to be a pro Beterbiev pick.
I disagree in Beterbiev having to walk through the shots. These are light heavyweights, and I don't care what anybody says. Bivol hits hard. You know, again, I've been ringside. I've been in the corner against one of his opponents, Sullivan Barrera. Sullivan is a very solid guy. He hits hard. He hits hard with everything. He just, like I said, he doesn't have that extra gear where he goes for the knockout, but he hits hard enough to keep you off of bait. Beterbiev is not going to try and wade through shots. That's not the way he fights anyway. But also, Beterbiev is a little bit chinny. He's been down multiple times in his career. He gets very offensive-minded and walks into shots. And they weren't always the biggest shots that hurt him or dropped him. So I don't think he's going to go for that, try to wade through shots with such a sharp, accurate guy like Bivol is. I think he's going to try and box with him. And he's going to when he does land, he has the power advantage. He does have that game changer shot. He does have that kind of power that can literally, one, we can put the lights out, but two, it can just change the rest of the flow. Yeah. That's something that I think that a lot of people who are watching fights don't understand. A punch doesn't have to end a fight to end a fight. You can get hit with a shot early on that changes the way you fight from there on out. And it could be because you're literally wrong the whole rest of the fight. You never show it. Or it could be because you're like, wow, I can't get hit with one of those again. So that's a little inside baseball for the fans at home with punchers. Certain people hit that way. That changes your entire style when the fight happens.
Wow. Very interesting. It's almost what happened with that Zelfa Barrett Rakhimov fight this weekend. Something happened with Barrett's legs. They just completely went out and everyone pointing out, what was it? What was something wrong with his leg? Did he get hurt his leg? Did he get hit equilibrium shot? So it can be a punch early that can changes up your whole game plan. And whether you're visibly hurt or, like you said, the second part, whether you're mentally, you're like, wait a second, I'm not going to do that again because I know what's going to happen after that.
I've been rocked with jabs in the first round that weren't even really that clean or harder shot. And it just hit you in the butt in the right spot. And you're like, oh boy, okay, this guy can hurt me, but. And then I've on the opposite end, I've been hit with shots that visibly hurt me and then went on and been like, this guy can't hurt me. This guy can't get me out of here. He hit me with his best shot. I'm good. I can walk him down, go through everything.
I hope the fight gets made. It's one of those things where it's different promoters, different networks. I think Bivol has one fight left with Matchroom. Beterbiev looks like he's with Top Rank. you know, Top Rank and Matchroom have made fights before. They've done business before. We can be hopeful for this one. Better be was fighting Anthony Yard in early, I think late January, early 2023. So at least it's right in January. But that's a fun one. Yeah, it's
not, I like that fight.
Have you seen worse mandatories than that? But at least it's in January, and Berbiev comes through that and you know, is healthy. I don't know what's going to happen with Bivol. A lot of talk is about this Canelo rematch. A few things. I don't want to see it again. I don't think there's a reason to see it again. If Canelo really wants it, he'll push for it. There's even talk of it being at 168. Like, what is, does that accomplish? Like, why would Canelo want to beat him at a lower weight? Like, that, what is that? That's not something I think Canelo would want to do, number one. Like, the argument for that is, you know, Bivol can win undisputed. He can fight better be at 175 and win undisputed, then fight Canelo at 168 and win undisputed. Cool. That is a very cool thing to do, but I just don't see Canelo taking the rematch at a lower weight, because that just really kind of goes against everything Canelo is, and that's like a built-in advantage for him.
Yeah, I agree with you in the stance that Canelo would take to not take that. But I think that, man, that's some brass ring to reach for Bivol if he does win the Berbiev fight. And then he goes down. And so I didn't speak about this, but I was thinking it when you said it. Bivol not wanting the Canelo match right away, right? I think he's going to want it later because money. He wants to be undisputed. He's still a hungry fighter, which is awesome to see at that level and the guys he's beating. He's still a hungry fighter. He's not trying to cash out, but he beats a better BF. If he beats better BF, which is, we have no idea. It's a big if, like you said, it really is a 50-50 fight. I think he will, but who knows? And then you go down to 68 and you fight Canelo. Now you get the money guy and the legacy good fight at the same time. That is a really, really good situation to be in for Dmitry Bivol.
Yeah, it's there if he wants it. Canelo is obviously had the hand injury, and Hearn is saying no, he's going to be ready by May. I've heard September. I don't know what the theory. Nothing would shock me with Canelo. If he fights in May, I would not be shocked. Would any of us be shocked? No. If he fights in September, then, you know, there's a window for Bivol and Berbiev to get made before then. The winner of that can look at Canelo at 175. So there's a lot of things going on there. I personally don't think it's going to go any differently. I'm pretty sure you feel the same way. A Canelo Bivol match, 168 maybe. It could give Canelo a better shot than a 175, but not something I want to see. I want to see Canelo in different fights. I want to see better BF and Bivol tangle. That's what's going on this past weekend.
Bivol has dangled that idea about going down to 68 for a couple of years now. And again, like I said, I've been across the ring from him. I was at Wayne's with him. He's not a big 75er. He can probably make 68 with too much trouble.
But you know what I'm saying? It's like, we're building in advantages for Canelo. Like, I can't beat you at 175, so I'll beat you at 168. Like, I just don't see Canelo doing that. I mean, obviously, we know from him, he's just like a great pride, legacy, and all that. But who knows? We'll see how it all plays out. So, obviously, Bivol gets the big win this past weekend. That's two wins this year over Canelo Alvarez and Gilberto Ramirez. So, I'll ask you, Chris, this is a hot-button question. Who is your front runner for Fighter of the Year 2022?
So, I love Bam Rodriguez. That's my dude.
This is a Pro Bam podcast.
Pro Bam podcast. That kid is a gangster, and he can really fight. He had an amazing year. I think people forgot about the Quadras fight. I really do. Yeah. He took the fight on like 10 days notice and jumped up two weight classes to beat a very solid world-class guy to win his first world title. Superb performance. The angles he was cutting, the punches he was throwing on no time for training camp was absolutely mind-blowing. Then he goes on to Rungvisai, which now we're thinking this is going to be a really, really tough fight. Rungvisai is giving everybody trouble. He knocked out Chocolatito. Like, what? Bam destroys him. Completely dominates him, takes him apart. Then he has that other fight where he struggles a little bit. And that's when we realize, okay, he's not in his real weight class. There's an issue. You know, so people, I think, you know, I don't think just boxing people, but everybody's like, what have you done for me lately? And I think a lot of people are kind of focused on what he did in his last fight. And then you got Bivol, massive career defining coming out party fight win against Canelo Alvarez, the arguable pound for pound best fighter in the world at the time. Bivol beats him handily. I don't think there's any argument in terms of who won that fight. Then he comes and now he has Zerto Ramirez, supposed to be a big challenge, undefeated guy. It's 175, big 175er. Looking for a big fight, been calling out Canelo. completely dominates them, schools them from head to toe, from round one to round 12. So it's between those two guys. But like I said, this is a pro Bam podcast. I'm going with Bam.
Wow. To me, it's Bivol. Anytime you beat Canelo, pound for pound, number one consensus, do it like he did it, no doubt. Mm-hmm. And then that's the biggest part of the year for him. To follow it up and be a top five, undefeated, I'll put undefeated in air quotes because I know it's padded, and I know a lot of those were no-hopers in there. Like you said, consensus, top five light heavyweight is Zoto Ramirez. So that right there is a campaign from Bivol. You beat Canelo, you beat Zoto, hats off to you. I think he is the fighter of the year. Bam, obviously does some amazing things. Fighting three times should be applauded. Last fight didn't, he took a lot of punishment, but you fight three times in a year, that grabs your attention. And it's not just three stay busy fights. These are two fights that were over, you know, certified, you know, guys in the division that were former champions and really, really good. And then there's some other names in there. Devin Haney won two big fights this year, obviously against the same opponent, obviously, you know, an opponent that was not even on the same level as Haney. He becomes undisputed. But then you have the dark horse in this, and that is Roman Chocolatito Gonzalez. If he can
he's
beat
always
them,
there.
He's always there. I mean, he's been there for the last 15 years. This guy won't go away. I hope he never goes away. I hope he fights forever. I love watching him fight. Chocolatito has wins over Ray Martinez, who is at the time was maybe one of the best 112 pounders. Now, if he could beat him pretty soundly too. He gave him a lesson right there. Looked like a man in the ring with a boy.
Yep.
And then now Chocolatito can beat Estrada, who arguably best 115 pounder in the world. I think it's still Chocolatito, but you know those two are pretty damn close. Chocolatito could beat him more convincingly, which is arguable because their fights seem to go neck and neck every time they step in the ring. I do think Chocolatito won the last one 8-4, but it's not like it's distinguishable 8-4. It's close rounds, a lot of punches being thrown. Chocolatito wins. You can make a case, so he can run him to the front of that list. And then you also have Jermell Charlo, but he only fought once. That's like a performance of the year. You got to fight at least twice, in my opinion. It's very subjective. All these awards are, you know, I put it on Twitter last night. You know, Bivol is my fighter of the year. It's pretty clear to me. And then you had a lot of people throwing in, what about Bam? What about, you know, Charlo? What about Haney? What about Chocolatito? But that's great. I love having five different options. But to me, Bivol, his campaign right there is you beat Canelo, it gets the eyeballs of fight fans.
Yeah, I mean, I you are the Mr. Positivity and of the boxing. I'm a little less positive than you are, I guess probably because I've been on different sides of it. So I do like to be the contrarian. I knew you were going to pick Bivol. Bivol essentially is, you know, going to be the fighter of the year, especially if the way things stand the way they are. But man, it's my dude, Bam.
I mean, I wish there was another reward for Bam to win. Like, how about like?
Well, I mean, he's got breakout of the year, career breakout of the year for sure.
The thing that's weird with these awards, it's like there's like the boxing writers vote, and there's that one big one. But you know, there's other outlets. Like, we're gonna do our year end award show, and it is somewhat consensus, but it's not the end all be all. It's a very subjective sport, right down to the awards. But Fighter of the Year is the biggest award you can win. You know, it has a long history, and there's been some great ones over the years. So I think it's either Bivol or Bam. But it's been a great year for a lot of these fighters. Not disparaging Devin Haney at all or any of these other guys. You know, Jermell Charlo. Wish we saw Jermell Charlo fight again. If Jermell Charlo fought Zoo at the end of this month or next month, then you have a legit case for Jermell Charlo. You got to fight twice. Come on.
You can't fight once in a year and be Fighter of the Year. I don't care who you beat.
Unless it's the COVID year. It was down to Fury or Fimo in 2020.
COVID year is different. That's a whole different thing. And what was that? That was like 20 years ago at this point.
What year is it? I think I tweeted something the other day that like Gervonta versus Leo Santa Cruz was 3 years ago and it was clearly 2 years ago. Like, time doesn't matter.
Nah.
Daylight savings time today. Like, it's dark. I know, we got to get rid of daylight. That's going to be our next topic. How do we get rid of daylight savings time? Because it's going to start getting dark on the East Coast at 4:45.
I bet you Elon can do it. Let's talk to Elon. Let's get him to.
I'm hoping he just lets me stay on Twitter because I love Twitter, even though I get tweeted the most wild things over the last couple of days between spam. Well, I also put myself out there a lot. Well, I put a lot of takes out there. So if you're going to put yourself out there.
I'm a little upset that I haven't been kicked off Twitter before Elon took over, because I feel like I'm not definitely not going to get kicked off now, but I missed that opportunity.
Yeah, so my tweets have been getting dissected over the last couple of days. That's fine. Big fight coming up in 2023. 2023 first quarter is looking phenomenal. Mr. Positivity Dan will show you a list. I've already put out a list of the fights for the first quarter. It's loaded. So if you're not happy with how this year has ended, and there are our next topic, we'll get to the final 2 months of the year. 2023 first quarter is your year. Or your quarter as a boxing fan. One fight that got announced on Friday, literally out of nowhere, or Thursday. I forget what day it was. It was Caleb Plant versus David Benavidez. Wow. 168 pounders. Two of the best outside of Canelo. You can make a case that maybe Benavidez is better than Canelo at this moment, or could beat Canelo. But Caleb Plant, David Benavidez, props to both guys for signing on the dotted line. Props to both guys for not waiting for Canelo, especially Benavidez, to see what he's going to do. A lot of concessions I heard had to be made for on Plant's side. He wanted to come out second. He wanted this. He wanted that. Benavidez was like, yep. Give me that fight. I love this fight. This is best versus best, or close to it. Young guys under 30 years old. I think Plant might be 30 on the nose. Whatever. Young, hungry guys at 160, and they have a beef. I love this fight.
Yeah, no, hungry is the name of that fight. They are both hungry guys. I think Benavidez is the monster of that division. I've been saying that for a long time. That kid is something special. I love Caleb Plant is going for it. You know, like he spent a lot of time out of the ring waiting for the Canelo fight. Mm-hmm. And it paid off. He made big money in that fight. He definitely performed well in the fight up until the stoppage. He performed really well up until the stoppage, but
it was 1 year ago today.
Yeah. He ultimately did get stopped in the fight. And you know, he came back with a huge, huge statement win just a few weeks ago with Durrell. And now he goes right into this fight. I love this. This is the way boxing is supposed to be. You win, you fight, you win, you take the next dangerous fight. You just danger. That was my career. As soon as I stepped out of the prospect to contender status, I fought killers throughout. That's the way it's supposed to be. Once you go over that hump, you got to fight the toughest fights available every time out. And Plant's doing that. I tip my hat to him.
Yeah, Plant going from Canelo to Durrell to Benavidez. That is a damn good three right there. You got to tip your hat to him. A lot of criticism, like you brought up, took a lot of time off, 9 or 10 months he took off before the Canelo fight. Obviously, he was holding that lottery ticket. He had that final remaining belt that Canelo wanted. I've had this conversation so many times. Any fighter would have done the same thing Plant did. And he paid out. I think he made $12, $15 million for that fight. And a lot of people, even after that, were going to say, he ain't going to fight anyone now. He's just going to, he made his $15 million. He ain't going to fight anyone. He's just going to sit back and wait. Durrell, all right, he's kind of, you know, on the older side, kind of passed it. Good fight after coming back from the Canelo one. Now Benavidez, so you got to tip your hat to Caleb Plant. Awesome, love that. He is proving a lot of people wrong, and he is proving that his words do mean something, because he has said, I will come back and fight everyone. Benavidez, on the other hand, also another guy that you got to tip your hat to, because he is clearly in line to fight Canelo. Even though Canelo says, I don't want to fight any Mexicans or any Mexican Americans.
I don't even know what that means.
I don't want to even get into that. But we'll talk about Benavidez. You say he's a killer at 168. I 100% agree. You know, I got the numbers to back it up. First in overall connect percentage in the entire sport. He's the most accurate puncher in all of boxing. Fourth in plus minus, which is hit and don't get hit. Fourth in power connect rate. Fourth in jab connect rate. Fifth in punches landed per round. Offensive dynamo. There's no doubt about it. Very underrated defensively, too. I've talked about this, had him on the show numerous times. You know, I gave him those stats, and he's like, hey, I love that. But, like, you know, I'm pretty – like, I do stuff defensively that a lot of, you know, fans don't see and I don't get credit for. He works on his defense a lot. I like that about Benavidez. And you go over to Plant. He's the best defender at 168. Opponents only land 7.3 punches per round. He's the best defender versus power shots at 168. Which, like we just said, that's what Benavidez is going to want to do. He's going to try to land power on Plant, and Plant is the best defender against power shots, and Plant ranks number two at 168 in jabs landed. So all those numbers are what you know if you know about these two fighters. Benavidez is offensive minded, front foot coming forward. Plant is a slip and move type of boxer with power, because we saw that from Durrell. How do you see this fight playing out?
I see it very similar to how Plant and Canelo looked. I think that Plant is going to come out fast, and he's going to be having a lot of success early on. But I think each round, and I think Benavidez is going to start sooner than Canelo did. I think he's going to chip away, chip, 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 and the pressure eventually is going to get to Plant. Yeah. And I'm looking for the late rounds for Benavidez to really step up and start landing and putting pressure. And I'm not saying that he's going to end up stopping Plant, although he very well may, but I think it's going to come down to what's going to happen in the last third of that fight to really decide what's going to happen. Because that fight's not going to start until that last third, until those last three, four rounds. I think early on, it's pretty obvious. It's pretty easy to see Caleb Plant outboxing him and being busy using his speed, using his footwork, using that slick head movement, countering, you know. And then, but what happens in those later rounds when the attrition starts to pile up? Because that's what Benavidez does. He's not knocking guys out early. He doesn't stop guys in rounds three and four. He beats guys down, breaks them down, beats them up, loads on pressure, bang, 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 bang. So I think that fight starts in like round eight.
Oh man, I can't wait. I wish it was happening next week, but it's happening in first quarter of 2023. And the thing that I can't like erase in my mind is Canelo Alvarez not being afraid of anything that was coming back from Caleb Plant. Nothing at all. You know, we just walked through a lot of those punches.
We always forget Canelo's a much smaller man. He's not a 68er at all. I used to spar with him a bunch of years ago. Like, he's not a big guy. He's shorter than me.
140?
47. I mean, he literally was a teenager then. But, like, even when he was, you know, he was, like, 30-0 at 40, and he was fighting at 47.
Yeah, when he fought Shane Mosley, it's when the first time I saw him live, was when he fought Shane Mosley on the Mayweather-Cotto undercard. He was 147. That was 10 years
ago. I was sparring with him when he fought Cotto's – But no, when, no, it was a Shane Mosley fight. Yeah. That's when I sparred with him. Actually, I sparred with him when he was in camp for the Shane Mosley fight, actually.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is I didn't, in that fight against Canelo and Plant, I didn't see anything from Plant power wise that made Canelo go, ooh, wait a second. Like, I can't do that. So that's the thing that keeps in my mind. And that's why I think this fight will play out. I think Benavidez will be a slight favorite. Love it. Can't wait. Love when a fight gets announced practically out of nowhere. I think that Showtime did the right thing here. PBC did the right thing. If they sweeten the deal for these two guys to get it across the finish line so we can forget about the stink that is Spence Crawford, whatever, forgetting the fight. And that just shows you these young guys want the smoke. Spence Crawford, they look like idiots because they're sitting there bickering on Twitter while big fights are being made. There are still a few big fights on the boxing schedule. None mega fights, but good fights nonetheless. You got Chocolatito and Estrada 3. You got Prograis Zepeda in a way stepping in the ring. Tyson Fury is stepping back into the ring. There are some pretty good fights for the remaining 60 days or less than 60 days of the year. Which fight are you most looking forward to, Chris, on the remaining boxing schedule?
No question, Chocolatito Estrada. No question. That fight is
easy answer.
And I hate saying this. It's a guaranteed classic because I feel like every time I said that the fights are stinkers.
Not these two.
I can't see these guys not. You said it earlier, Dan. Like, they just tend to have fights that are super tight and super close, and I don't see this one being any different. I think Estrada's awesome. I'm a big fan of Estrada. I always talk about combination punchers and how we lack them in a sport these days. That dude is a combination puncher. He lets his hands go, and the combinations are beautiful. And speaking of beautiful, Chocolatito, everything he does is beautiful. The guy he's a symphony of violence. He is in there and he just lets his hands go, his footwork, his head mood, everything blends together like a composer. It's incredible, incredible to watch. He's one of the most beautiful fighters I have ever seen. So you get those two guys going, it's going to be
It's the third fight. It's a trilogy. That's probably my one. But if I mean, obviously, I love Chocolatito, love Estrada, love this weight class, and hopefully, this is the fight that Chocolatito gets his just due. I thought he won the second fight pretty clearly. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but they would back that up. That to me is the biggest fight on the remaining schedule too, as well. But I will say, I'm also very excited for Regis Progre. And oh, yes. You got another Regis Progre and Zepeda is a clear number two for me. That's November 26th. It's Thanksgiving weekend. That's going to be an awesome one. 140-pound division wide open. Taylor and Catterall are fighting February 4th. You got Progre and Cepeda. You got Jose Ramirez in the mix. You got Teofimo Lopez in the mix. Then you got guys like the 135ers that are eventually going to move up to 140, like Devin Haney, Brian Garcia, Tank maybe one day. It's a really fun division. This is a really fun fight, Progre Cepeda. And that's one thing I'll say about this remaining schedule. It's not like banger after banger. I mean, you got Michelle Rivera versus Frank Martin, which was just announced this weekend too, fun for fight. December 17th. That's a 50-50 fight. Chocolo Estrada 3, somewhat of a 50-50 pick'em type of fight. Progre Cepeda, pick'em fight. Ioka versus Franco, which is going down on New Year's Eve, is a pick'em fight. So, okay, there's the Inouye versus the Paul Butler, which should be over in three rounds, maybe even 3 minutes. And then you got Tyson Fury, Chisora, which is... And then you got... Terrence Crawford versus Anavesian. That's how you say it.
I think it's a good fight. I think that's going to be a good fight.
But it, I think Crawford is minus 1,400 favorite. So, I mean,
yeah,
on paper, it's a blowout.
I don't see Avesanian. I'm sorry for butchering your name every single time. I don't see him beating Crawford, but I think he's going to. I almost see like Mean Machine, the Kavalauskas fight with Crawford. Like he gave Crawford trouble. As long as it lasted, he was in there. And I think that it's going to be kind of similar to that.
Okay, it's David Avanesian.
I wasn't too far off. Avanesian. Okay.
Avanesian.
So, all right, from everyone in there in the Twitterverse, we got it now. Avanesian.
Yeah, let's give this guy his just due because he's going to be fighting pound for pound.
And he's a good fighter.
Yeah, he is.
He's a good fighter. He deserves his respect. I agree with you. I'm excited for the Zepeda Progre fight. Zepeda is a friend of mine and a former sparring partner from back in the day for me.
John, what a beast.
John is awesome. And he's a solid dude all around, in and out.
Those Progre too. These are like two fun guys. Like I like both these guys a lot. Regis is a nutcase. You know, always out there, follow him on Instagram. He's, you know, jumping off cliffs. He's riding mopeds. He's doing wild stuff. I know when DiBella was promoting him, and they're still cool, despite DiBella and them not working together. I know that Lou wouldn't even look at his Instagram, wouldn't look at his social media, because it's like, what is he doing now? Like, where he's in, like, South America, like, swimming with alligators. Like, what, this guy needs to chill.
No, he doesn't have that in him. He doesn't have that. He fights like that too. So it just, you know, a lot of times you are in the ring, which you are out of the ring. I love that fight. And then I think we're not getting enough play for the Teofimo fight. Pedraza? Honestly, that's Pedraza. Dude, Pedraza's tough. He is a sharp shooting. The sniper is such a perfect name for him. Like he truly is a sniper in there. He's solid as hell. He's given everybody trouble. Doesn't matter who you are, even including Lomachenko. That's a serious test for Teofimo up at 140. I mean, granted, he's fighting another lightweight at 140. And honestly, the Pedraza is not even, he was never really a big lightweight. He won his first world title at 130, fought Tank there. I called that fight, actually. Tank, but yeah, no, Pedraza? That's a good fight. Yeah, but yeah, I called Tank and Pedraza.
That's like Tank's best win.
Yeah.
That's the fight that everyone goes back to. Like, you have these Tank haters, and then they have these Tank apologists, and the apologists were like, well, he beat Pedraza, and Pedraza was still something.
I thought Pedraza was going to win that fight, honestly. I thought he was going to be able to outsmart him, outmove him. But Pedraza stood there and fought him. I was like, what is he doing? But, yeah, it didn't work out. Yeah. That Santa Cruz fight was fucking – that was a damn good performance, too. Santa Cruz was a beast.
That came up on Memories or whatever on Twitter. Or it happened on – Halloween night 2020. And I did a breakdown of that. Like the three right hands Santa Cruz threw. Why? Up with his back against the corner, threw three straight right hands, same punch. And the first one partially landed. Second one, Tank blocked it. And you can see Tank, like, if he throws this again, I'm throwing the meanest uppercut.
I am unloading.
The meanest uppercut in the history of boxing. And it's the most insane knockout. I mean, that knockout still resonates. Vicious. It was one of the best. He folded up. Leo Santa Cruz. That, he folded.
In terms of technical execution, that was perfect. Yeah. Slip, boom, ride it right back. Slip and shoot that thing up the middle.
You just landed an uppercut on your microphone.
Yeah, yeah. I just tanked my microphone.
That's a good place to stop then, right? Because that's the remaining fights of the year is our last topic. There's some good ones still there. You know, not getting the huge ones. And I tweeted this out on Friday. 32 undisputed or undisputed or unifications this year. 32 between women's and men's. There's a lot. Exactly. There's either guys defending all their belts. Or two champions facing off. Yes, it could be like, hey, there's way too many belts in boxing if there's 32 of them. But I think, if anything, it shows that it's a good gauge of the best fighting the best or competition-wise. So all in all, been a good year for boxing. Obviously, we didn't get some of these bigger ones, but if you take a look at 2023, it's looking that way. All right, that's the show for this beginning of the week. We'll be back Thursday live on the Inside Boxing Live YouTube page. Ronnie will be there with his Rocky 2 review. His Rocky 1 review pissed off some people. A filmmaker tweeted at me. I he says I might have to stop listening. That's horrible review.
It pissed me off too, but
you got red. You were getting red. Like Ron, at least he like I said, I respected his take on it because he didn't just like tell us what we wanted to hear. He wasn't just like, oh, awesome movie. Sitting here with two boxing guys, ex-fighter and a guy that loves boxing. So I'm gonna like, no, he was just like this. I fell asleep and then it was really slow, but it ended fast. It ended good and it was ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, he's Hot Takes Ronnie. We Ronnie Hot Takes. We know that. But you know, he's from a different era. He's a much, much younger guy than us.
He might like Creed. He might rank Creed as the best once he gets to Creed in like 5-6 weeks.
I guarantee he will, but
there it is. There's our show. We'll be back on Thursday, everyone. As always, protect yourself at all times. I forgot my own catchphrase. We out.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.